welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm one of your new hosts, Peter Dunlap-Scholl, and today we'll explore how Alaskans are using social media and why you should care. With me today in the studio are public relations specialist Mary Deming Barber and Alaska blogger par excellence Steve Alfrecht. And we'll be getting to your calls, we hope, later and giving out those numbers for the calling and emailing. But for now, I'd like to go to Mary and ask her. Mary, thanks for coming in. First of all, it's your peach to do this. And could you briefly tell us just what social media are or is?
I think we decided it was.
That's right. Could you tell us what social media is and how you use these tools in the recent Murkowski campaign?
Thanks, Peter, and thanks for having me today, too. This should be really an interesting discussion, I think, because the topic is incredibly broad. Mm-hmm. And I think social media is one of probably well over 1,000 tools at this point that people can use to communicate with other people. And what social media has done is it's changed the journalism field, newspapers, radio, television, from being one way to being two way, to engaging with customers, to engaging with their audiences. And it's also meant that as a public relations professional, we have the ability to engage others in what we do. When we think of media, it's usually something where we are consuming. The media is telling us what they want us to hear. When you add social to it, we're all communicating and we're all engaging in what we're talking about.
And as a PR professional, that's meant opportunities for you that you didn't have before, I suppose.
It's really exciting. It's been very exciting. You and I went to college together, so we both know how old the other one is. But yep. When we started in this field, when I started, there were no computers. There were no fax machines. We typed and then mimeographed our press releases, which were then mailed, yes, U.S. Post Office, to the media. Or in some cases, we would go and meet in person with the reporters that we wanted to talk to in a local market. In my first job, I would almost daily drive over to the Oregonian, then go to Channel 2 in Portland and the stations and meet with the reporters that we wanted to have talk about our client or our organization. Today, we email those, or we don't even do that as much anymore. We go on Facebook, we go on Twitter, and we engage with the reporters.
Right, which is giving you an avenue to actually, you don't need those former irreplaceable links to the public. You've got your own.
We have our own. Yes, we do. And you know, on the Murkowski campaign, what we did was we used a lot of our social media tools, Facebook and Twitter especially, but also YouTube and some local blogs to help get our message out. But what it also did was it meant that the voters, people around Alaska, were taking those messages and putting them in their own words and putting them in their own pages. So you had this enormous spider web effect. The good part about that is if your message is getting out there the way you want it to get out, it helps you spread your message. The bad part is if someone decides that they want to change the message a little bit, and then it becomes untrue, and you're chasing after some
right.
of those.
They garble the message for you. I mm-hmm. thought that's an interesting problem. I tend to think of this more from my old mindset as a newspaper guy, and I wonder what is a person going to use to evaluate this social media? How do you tell over time whether someone is reliable or not?
A lot of that is in, then you get to going back to the traditional relationships of, I've known this person this way, and you go to real face-to-face relationships that are still integrally important. We're kind of in this place right now where nationally there are people who I might know to help me with a story, but locally I have to know those people face-to-face.
Right.
So it completely changes how you're doing things on a local basis versus a national basis or an international basis. I don't think personal relationships are any less important than they have ever been, though. And so I think that trend will continue. However, there's a stronger sense, too, of these people you've never met in real life and you're not that sure who they are. And that's where you go on the kind of the mazes that connect people together.
Right. The whole field, you said there's like 1,000 different ways you could connect, and we could name a bunch of them, Tumblr or YouTube or... Even Craigslist is probably social media at some level.
It is.
And how is a person supposed to sift through and find what's useful and where the good information is?
I think a lot of it is based on what you need to, what you want to be doing. A lot of people earlier this afternoon, we were talking about what we had for breakfast, and that's what some people think Twitter is. This is just going on and saying, hey, I'm having my latte and my peanut butter bagel. Well, if that's what it is to you, you're probably not using the tool correctly. And like any communication tool, you should know what you want to try to achieve or what you're trying to learn or what you're trying to do before you choose the tool. And then the best thing is to go on Google or another search engine and kind of try to find the people or the places that are meeting your need. Facebook has huge growth right now in 45 and older women. The brands that want to reach those people are now flocking to Facebook because they know that's where they can reach them.
I'm surprised that there's anybody that's not on Facebook at this point. Maybe Steve, are you on? You've avoided Facebook, or you're barely
I have
Facebook
a Facebook
later.
Account because I had some students in Europe who said the best way to keep in touch with them was on Facebook.
Why have you shied away from these? Because you're not a Luddite, as they say.
Well, I try and do stuff that makes sense to me and that I can use in my life.
Right.
I still haven't figured out how to use Facebook efficiently. I mean, there's all these people on my Facebook who I would never know what they were doing if they weren't on Facebook, because they're not people I would interact with.
Right.
And the kinds of things I'm learning about them is not necessarily stuff I need to know or stuff they need me to know. And, you know, the people that I would talk to, I mean, my kids were not, you know, I'm not friends with them and they're not friends with me. And it's sort of a mutual agreement to stay out of their lives. But the people I would be really close with and like to have in a group like that to say, you know, I'm going to be in L.A. this weekend if anyone's around, you know, they're not the people on Facebook with me.
That's interesting, because I found Facebook is a great tool for following my son, who's actually going to be in Rwanda very soon.
Oh,
and
cool.
He's been in Greece, and it's really nice to be able to check in and see his photos that he's taking. And we have the kind of relationship where we do want to be involved with each other, and this has been a great tool for this for me while he's been away for 4 years at school.
Well, I was just in New York for a meeting, and it was very interesting to listen to the conversation of people who hadn't seen each other in a couple years or something. But granted, it's all PR people, so most of us are using these tools. But you heard people saying, how's your son's baseball team doing? And you know, and asking about things that were items we just didn't know about a couple years ago. And so you feel like some of these people on Facebook, you know them more intimately than you did previously. And there's a good thing to that and a bad thing to that. And I think that we have to be really careful what we post, and that what we post is what we might want to see as a headline tomorrow too.
That's the sort of thing that I think a lot of us are still getting a grip on. And I've seen some pictures that I think are going to embarrass nephews and nieces in years to come, but
oh yeah.
I don't know how to stop them at this point. We have another caller now that we'd like to go to, who has been using social media as a way of getting in touch with people he can't normally get in touch with, and that would be Justin. Justin, you want to tell us a little bit about what you've been up to?
Well, thanks for having me on the show, and I'm going to come at this from a different perspective, because I actually use social media to do business, and I don't know how much experience that your studio speakers have with this today, but I can tell you that I find that the options that you get through Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc., these things are low cost, they have long reach, they give you a shot at controlling your image, you also get to control your message, and you get to do this in a way that's personalized enough to the people that you reach so that it makes them more willing to say good things about you in the marketplace.
So Justin, were you a techie kind of person, or was this the sort of thing that was intimidating for you when you first started out?
Oh, I am not even slightly technical. I don't have a mechanical bone in my body, and computers were a struggle for me to learn. And I honestly have to chalk that up to the fact that I am a low vision person. I'm legally blind, and I was adapting to the marketplace. As the marketplace becomes more high tech, then I realize that I have to violate my own comfort zone and do some of these things. So as the technology became available for me to start Shadow Fusion Books, then I had to go to school. I had to learn stuff, and then I did it. And then later on, when I wanted to get into internet broadcasting, same thing. I had to learn more so that now when I do my internet show, I don't electrocute myself, I don't sound goofy on the air, and I reach people who actually want to hear what I have to say.
So what you're saying is it wasn't an option for you. You had to dive into this world whether you wanted to or not.
Absolutely. This is one of those things that you will use it or you will be left behind.
Well, thanks for your call, Justin. That's enlightening, to say the least, that as a businessman, you found like you had to do this. And I know there's lots of people out there that would rather not. And this is the sort of thing that we don't seem to have so much choice about anymore.
Well, let me jump in again. I mean, okay. You know, there's obvious advantages. I've had former students from Thailand and Hong Kong find me on Facebook. Uh-huh. You know, people I haven't seen in 30 years. On the other hand, I have people like, was it Justin?
Justin, yes.
You know, who are trying to be my Facebook friend because they want to sell me something. And, you know, I don't want those people.
Okay. And I think you have a choice to say no to those people, too. Something else that he said that I thought was really interesting was that he feels like he has control when he's on Facebook. And that kind of gets back to some of the issues that people have, I think, with Facebook and stuff, too. He does have control of what he posts, but he doesn't have control of what I post about him or what I post about his books or his company. And I think that's where we have to be really careful that we're also listening to what's going on and to what people are saying. Even people who don't want to be on Facebook or Twitter, that kind of thing, if you don't have a Google alert about yourself or about your company name, you don't know if you've been splashed all over someone else's page in a derogatory manner. So for companies and people in the spotlight to not have those tools in place so that they know what's being said about them, I think that is something that's like step one in my book.
Okay,
is to listen.
I'd like to ask you a question about that in a sec, but I first want to give out our telephone number so that other people can ask you a question as well. They can reach us at 550-8433 in Anchorage, or statewide they can call us at 1-888-353-5752. Or if you want to email us, you can get us at hometown@alaskapublic.org.
I would add on, I mean, one of the things that happens to me as a blogger is that I get emails from people saying, you know, will you put this on your blog for us?
Oh, and, sure, I get those too.
You know, and the ones that are particularly disturbing are the ones that say, you know, and we'll pay you this much. And if you don't say you're getting paid, we'll pay you more.
That's what
I guess they haven't talked to the FTC lately, have they?
Well, I've sent stuff to the FTC.
Yeah.
So let's ask a question about the FTC. You're saying that is the sort of thing that you're going to get fined for or possibly go to jail for?
Yeah, there are new guidelines, well, relatively new from the FTC. And if you are paid to put something on your blog, you need to disclose it.
And pay would be is in the form of currency, or would that also be in contributions in kind or things like that? Or is that the wrong question for you?
I'm not sure, Peter. I know it's currency. Uh-huh. I don't know if it's other in-kind types of things
for instance,
too, either.
I had a guy that sent me a book recently, and I mentioned it on the web, but I was sure to mention that I had also been given this copy of this book because I wanted them to know that anyway, because that's just sort of disclosure you should do.
Right. And I think for you, using the guidelines that you use as a journalist are the best way to go.
Yep. I was going to get back to something you brought up earlier, which is, I don't know if everybody knows what a Google alert is, and if you could just explain that so that now they know that if they have it, they'll know what it is as well.
A Google alert is a program really within Google that you can set up to receive messages on your email whenever certain things are mentioned that you're interested in. You can have a Google alert for the Boston Red Sox if you're a Red Sox fan. And anytime the Boston Red Sox are mentioned in the media that shows up in Google searches, you'll get an email about that article. You can have them about your company, your competitors, yourself. That's called a self-Google, so that you know what's being said out there. They're pretty easy to set up. You just go to Google and then over to the More tab, and you'll see alerts, and it walks you through how to set them up. also walks you through how to stop them if you decide you're getting too much stuff.
And do you probably have one about yourself? Do you get frequent hits on that, or is that the sort of thing that happens from time to time?
I get them more often because I'm on Twitter. Uh-huh. And so it also searches on Twitter and those types of things. But it's kind of interesting also because sometimes I'll see that something that I've said on Twitter has gone a lot further than I might have realized it had gone.
Right.
So they're really very interesting to look at.
Well, now that we're talking about Twitter, why don't we tell people what Twitter is? Because I'm sure a lot of people, half the people think it's a waste of time and half the people don't know what it is. And Steve, I believe you are not a Twitter user. Is that right?
I'm not a Twitter user because I, you know, again, with the Facebook, I have a blog. And so it does a lot of the stuff that I would do on Facebook.
Right.
And I just said, you know, I can only learn so many things.
Exactly.
That's a problem. That's something that I think is going to be a recurring theme here.
And I can only take in so much information.
Exactly. And how do you do that? Actually, I found that Twitter can be a good way of sort of sorting information and high grading and low grading stuff that I want to look at.
One of the reasons I said yes is so I could find out how to use Twitter.
I thought you just did it as a favor for me, Steve.
Well, the thing with Twitter is, and any of these tools, you have to know why you want to be on them before you decide whether or not to be on. Twitter is a microblogging tool that you can use to send 140-character statements to anybody who's following you. The people who are following you, in most cases, are following you because they're interested in what it is you have to say. And that's where this notion of, I had a peanut butter bagel for breakfast, really isn't, in my experience, what Twitter is. In the beginning, I wanted to explore Twitter to find out what public relations professionals around the country were doing with Twitter and how they were using it. So in the beginning, I was in a listening mode where I was trying to see what was out there. I was reading what was out there. I was finding new things and also meeting new people. Even though I wasn't meeting them in real life, I was meeting them over Twitter because we were engaged in conversations. Over the course of time, I've built up more of a following with people across the country in PR, also some people in Alaska with the Murkowski campaign. I gained some political followers, and I started following more political people. It's become a joint thing. But that's because what I wanted to do was to learn about PR across the country and to learn what's happening in Alaska. You can also set up your Twitter feed so that it separates by list, by interest area. And on my Twitter feed, I maintain three lists, actually. One that are public. One is Alaska businesses. One is Alaska nonprofits, and I've just drawn a total blank on the other one.
It's PR.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
No.
The third one's not PR.
No, actually, okay. It's not. Because the Alaska business and the Alaska nonprofits, I started maintaining about 2 years ago as businesses in Alaska started to come onto Twitter so that there was a place where people could go and follow that list so that they knew what was happening in businesses in Alaska. You can go to my Twitter profile, which is, my handle is MD Barber, and you can follow that list just by one click. And then as I discover other businesses in Alaska that are using the tool, I add them to the list and they'll automatically be in your feed if you're following that list.
So what can you do on Twitter without signing up for Twitter?
I don't think you can do anything on Twitter except for you could probably Google yourself and see what was coming up on Twitter that way.
I've read Twitters that people sent.
What you can do is you can go onto twitter.com and just listen to the entire feed.
Okay.
But that's where you get, it's not filtered. And that's where people are starting to, where people say, you know, I really don't care what you had for breakfast.
Yeah.
Because, and you're right. You don't care.
You can't test out Twitter the way you can test out blogs.
In what sense are
in
you?
In what sense?
Well, that you can go read the blogs and do all that stuff and see what's out there and without having your own blog.
Oh, no, you can do that.
Okay.
You could go to twitter.com right now and read what's out there.
Okay, I've done that much.
But you're reading what's out there from the entire world.
Okay.
I've never done that. That's something I didn't realize you could do because I've never used Twitter that way.
It's pretty scary.
Can I just hold us up for a sec here and announce our numbers again so people...
Okay. So and then I want to go back to talk about hashtags.
Okay.
Because that's how you could do it more easily, too.
Okay, we'll talk about hashtags in a minute. But first, we're going to hash out our number here, which is 550-8433 in Anchorage, or if you're outside of Anchorage in the great hinterland out there, that's 1-888-353-5752. And you can email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So you're going to tell us about hashtags, Mary.
Yeah. The other way, Steve, that you could go on to Twitter and get better information is through the use of by using a hashtag, to search by a hashtag. If you're reading on Twitter or sometimes on Facebook, people will what they call cross-post and put things on both Twitter and Facebook at the same time. And if you see on Twitter where the pound sign is used, followed by some words, you can go into twitter.com and then search based on that hashtag. So, for instance, last night, Senator Begich had a virtual town hall where he was taking questions from Alaskans on Twitter, and then he was on, he was live streaming this town hall meeting similar to what the president did earlier in the week. If you wanted to ask him a question, you typed in the question and put hashtag pound sign ask Begich. You can go back right now and see everything that happened in that conversation by typing twitter.com/askBegich, and it'll show up.
And that's going to be forever and ever, as far as we know, right?
As far as we know, yeah.
That's another question I have is, you know, I assume that, you know, one day my blog is just going to vanish.
I don't think it will vanish. I think, for one thing, that as far as I know, they're archiving the entire internet every day, which just blows my mind.
It's got to be huge.
But they are doing that. So your blog is going to, as long as they've got these archives, which are built on some kind of incredible chemistry that is going to last forever, that it's never going away, Steve, so you got to be careful what you say. But
yeah, play your old CDs.
I think they're aware of that, and they're working on making sure the old CDs still work. Okay. Mine still work, by the way. I don't know what the problem is. But I do know they're supposed to be falling apart, and that's a whole different...
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. The binding materials are not holding the digits on CDs. It's not archival medium at all.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Well, here's something I'd like to ask, and that is that I'm sensing there may be a gender difference in the way people use social media. And I don't know if you ever thought about this, but it occurs to me that when I use media, I'm trying to... When I use Twitter or blogs, or the main thing I use is Google, I try to connect with information. Whereas you're connecting with people is what it sounds like to me. And that is, I'm trying to find stuff out. Usually I'll whip out my phone and say, who is the lead character in the George Raft picture from 1954? And I'll try to find out what that is, or I'll try to find out what a certain word is. I'll look words up all the time. But what you're telling me is that you're using it to connect people up.
I do what you do, and I also use Twitter and Facebook for some of that information as well. It's one of those things that it depends. Uh-huh. It depends on what I'm doing. If I'm trying to solve a PR question, I might use Twitter for that, because I'll go out to someone I've met in St. Louis and say, hey, can you help me with this? Instead of going to Google, because I can get to the information faster because I know the person out there who has the answer.
Right.
But I don't know if it's a gender difference or it's a professional difference.
That's one thing that occurred to me.
You know, I think it has to do with why you're there. Because, I mean, my blogging started the same way your Twittering did. I mean, I went on just because I wanted to know what blogging was. And so I figured I had to do it to figure out what it was. And I got more and more engrossed in it and started reading other stuff about blogging and looking at other people's blogs and...
It's the same thing.
Right. It's the same thing.
Different tool.
I started at on a different medium.
Right. And then you adjust the medium or change the mediums or stay on the mediums based on what it is that you want to do
and
what you want to get out of it.
And this is the perfect medium for what I want to do, because I can combine writing and photographs and video and audio and tell whatever stories I want to tell.
Okay. Well, we have a caller who would like to tell a story. This is Heidi. Heidi, would you like to chime in here? I'm sorry, this is Jason.
Yeah, Jason?
Yeah. Sorry, Jason, I don't know who Heidi is, but obviously it's not you. Could you go ahead and let us know what you want to talk about?
Oh, well, I missed the first part of the show, so if you got it, just hush me up. But the huge generational difference in social media...
Good point.
I have two teenagers. And I think for them, I hear one of your callers kind of saying, you know, if his blog's going to be around in a while, and the thing about breakfast on Twitter feed. And I think for the teenagers now, growing up with social media, it's a seamless community for them. They don't see the difference the way my generation does in a community of place versus a community of interest. And for them, they're all really becoming the same thing. And it's because of social media that they can navigate between these communities with an effort that my generation just can't see. And I think that that's really important. And in 20 years, this conversation will almost be funny.
Well, I think it's got its humorous aspects already.
Yeah.
But, and it brings up the topic that we haven't even talked about, cell phones.
Right, that's
which
definitely
is part of all of this, and texting.
But it also brings up the idea that I should have had a teenager on the show, because they're obviously the experts, and we've got a couple of, we're all over our teens at this point.
We're all over.
So, Jason, do you think the main difference in would be generational and not gender in the way people approach this?
Yeah, I'm sure if we probe deep enough, there might be some slight gender differences in as there are with you know, communication. But I think generationally that's going to be the real stark difference, is just the way these tools will evolve, and they'll almost seem like, you know, they're not even tools anymore. It's just the way that people interact with their social landscape. I think it'll be vastly different for my children than it is for me.
Do you think there's going to be a rift between the generations, because we've got us older people, and we're sort of trying to figure this stuff out? And
I already see it, because my mother won't text. She refuses to text, and it frustrates me, because I'm like, it would be so much easier if you could just text.
Right, that's another form of social media, and that's one I haven't done much with, but I've seen the advantage of it, because my other people text me, and I was like, oh, that's a pretty handy way of doing things.
And my teenagers text me from within the house.
Uh-huh.
Is dinner ready yet?
In the house?
Yeah. They don't use their phones to talk on.
Well, you know, the first time I saw someone in Costco call his wife to find out where she was in Costco, I went, oh, geez.
I thought you were going to say call her to find out what you should be buying in Costco.
Yeah.
I've actually done that before. I've called from the aisles of the supermarket to say, what was I supposed to get? I can't remember. Let's listen.
Yeah, that's more understandable.
Well, that is one thing that the younger generation seems to have less of inhibitions of is putting stuff up on Twitter that I would, or Facebook, or many places, things that I would never put up, which is, I think, speaks to a changing issue about the way people think about privacy. And we should probably go to Steve about that, since you wrote your thesis on privacy when you were in school, when you were young.
Yeah, my basic thesis was, I mean, I looked at it, and there's the psychological view of privacy, which says we have this inner core which needs to be protected from the outside world. But as I looked at it, it really, I don't believe that, because it really depends on what the consequences of the information getting out are.
Uh-huh.
So that if you're a rock star, you know, it's okay if the world knows what your sex life is.
Or what you had for breakfast.
Or what you had for breakfast.
Or what you shot for breakfast.
Yeah.
What you drank for breakfast.
Yeah.
But if you're a Sunday school teacher, you know, you don't want your sex life, or a politician, you don't want your sex life out there. And so it's really the consequences. And as I looked at it, the real issue of privacy got into two areas. One is the ability, you know, to get away and just to have a space where nobody interfered with you. And the other aspect was informational privacy, that you had control over information about yourself. And so as I looked at privacy, the real issue is about power. It's the power to control other people's access into your lives and into your information, and the power that they have to get through. And what I concluded back in 1977 was that, given the technology and where it was going, if someone really wanted to know everything about you, they could. I mean, the technology was already there then. And so the real issue of getting privacy was to balance access to other people's information. So a certain part of me says, the more that's all the way out there, the more that that's happening, the more that everyone is vulnerable, we have to be more respectful of each other, because we're equally vulnerable, because there's no other way to protect yourself. You just can't do it. So on the other hand, you know, I look at some stuff, and because the world isn't equal yet in that, right. you know, some people are exposing parts of themselves which can really hurt them.
Right. Well, we'd like to talk more about that as we come back after the break, but it's time for us to take our midterm break and give our listeners a chance to sort of and process all this and give ourselves a chance to process it all. So if we could go to the break now, that would be the sort of thing that we would like to do next.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Hometown Alaska, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Hometown Alaska on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Hello and welcome back to Hometown Alaska. And we're having a barn burner of a discussion here on social media. And I've got two guests with me. One is a PR specialist, who is Mary Deming Barber, and the other is a blogger, Steve Alfrecht. And we were just talking about privacy. And Mary, I think you were just enlightening Steve a little bit about teenagers and privacy. And maybe you could share some thoughts on that.
Well, the thing that I think is really interesting about the changes in social media and the proliferation of really people not caring necessarily what they're saying or posting out there about themselves or about other people is really interesting. And it kind of, it dovetails with what Steve was saying about the responsibility that we have to take care of our own privacy and also to be wary of other people's needing privacy. I counsel students a lot who are public relations students in Anchorage or around the country about making sure that your Facebook profile, your Twitter profile, your LinkedIn profile, all those things are clean before you go to start looking for a job. As an employer, if I am talking to a student and there are pictures of this student drunk at a party on their Facebook page, it might make me ask a couple questions before I really hire that person. Or maybe it wouldn't. Maybe I want them there. But I think
it depends on the job.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that we have to be really careful, and we also have to understand if we're on those tools that there is a way for us to at least remove that from our page and that kind of thing, too.
And that's one of the things that bothers me. I mean, I went onto a website, and I was going to make a comment, and suddenly my Facebook picture and link was there.
It is creepy, isn't it?
Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't say anything about Facebook, and I'm looking at Google, and all of a sudden now my Google, because I have to be on Google to do Blogger.
Right.
And so I have to log into Google to do my blog.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly when I go on Google, it's a personalized Google. It's not just a blank page. It's got my name on it and everything. And I think part of the problem is that most people don't understand where everything is going.
Right.
And they're surprised to find that there are pictures of themselves here and there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's so easy to make a mistake and have that mistake broadcast around the world before you wake up in the morning.
Well, it's even worse than that in some ways. And Mary, maybe this would be something you can talk about, and that is I think they're now trying to rank everybody's influence by looking at various things. There's a couple searches. Isn't that what they do?
That's what clout does. And I think that that's the next thing that we're going to start to see even more of are the measurement tools of how you can figure out how effective your messages are, but also who's the most effective at it. And Clout is the latest and greatest tool, one of them that's out there. And they have an algorithm that they use to determine how influential you are. But again, it's one of those algorithms that you look at it and you go, okay, how you measured me based on this gigantic algorithm, but for instance, the only people I'm trying to influence are these 10 people in Anchorage.
Right.
And they're not measuring how I'm influencing those 10 people. They're measuring me against Obama.
Right.
And then I have a friend, a PR colleague here in town, who her clout score, it also tells you what you influence and who influences you when you look at it. She's a newborn mother of twins, or she's a mother of newborn twins. She, on Clout the other day, it said that she was influential with the Minnesota Twins.
So the algorithm is not all the way there yet.
It's not all there. I mean, you have to take most of these tools right now with a grain of salt and be careful.
There are several, I think, that are trying to do this. And the consequences, if you're not out there, are also going to be there for you because they're starting to discount things by your clout number, et cetera, hotels and things like this.
Yeah. So that's, and you get bennies and perks and that kind of thing.
It's like your credit score.
Yeah.
That happens, and most people aren't aware of what it is and how it's happening. You know, Technorati, which was one of the earlier ones to measure blog hits, you know, had some rankings and stuff like that. And I just had to think about it for a while and say, you know, I really don't care. I'm doing my thing, and, you know, that's something out there, and it's irrelevant to me.
Exactly.
Though it's not totally.
It's not totally, but you can't be obsessed with it. If you're obsessed with it, you never accomplish anything.
And it goes back to everything else, which is you have to be comfortable with yourself in life.
Right.
And not be worried about what everybody else thinks about you and just try and figure out what you know is the right thing to do.
And there are people out there who are trying to game the clout system, too, which to me is just not what this is all about either. But
well, sure it is. I mean, whenever you have any kind of a measurement system, people try and figure out how to work themselves higher on that measure. You know, if it's a personnel review at the office or, you know, whatever it is.
And a lot of people are not even aware that this is going on. That's my point, is that they don't even know that this world has engulfed them.
And that's what the technology does. I mean, it's all the stuff about reading, you know, the agreement and the privacy. How many people read the privacy agreements? I mean, I try to read them and get a sense of them. But, you know, you can't do that for everything that you sign up for.
Well, we have a lot of people that want to get in the conversation here. It looks like we've got a couple emails and also a phone call that I'd like to get to eventually here. So let's take a look at these emails and see what they have to say. Angela Gonzalez of Anchorage, Alaska says, What is it going to take for companies to see the incredible value of social media for connecting with their audience customers as part of their marketing promotion campaigns? That sounds like a question for you. And are you able to answer that, or is it?
I can start to answer it. I think that the thing is that companies need to analyze what it, just like we do as people, they need to analyze what it is that they want to do. At the very least, I think that if companies are not listening to what's being said about them, even if they're not on the platforms, they need to be doing that. But it also takes a whole audit of your communications program and a whole determination of what it is you want to do. I don't think that all companies should be on Twitter or should be on Facebook or should be. They need to figure out the tools that they want to be on. And it's a huge time investment for those companies as well, because you can't just be on Facebook from 9 to 5. You have to have coverage on those things after hours, especially if you're a national or international company, so that you can respond. There's an immediacy that happens with social media that we may or may not like, but it is what's out there.
Okay. I'd like to circle back to a little bit more specific Alaska questions with this caller, which is got a guy named Dan who wants to talk about social media for outreach in Alaska. Oh, looks like we lost Dan. That's unfortunate. Dan, if you want to call back, we'll try and get you back. So we'll move on to this next email here.
Let me just throw out a name of a book. Naked Conversations was a book several years ago about blogging, which looked at what businesses need to do. And as you're saying, they said that, you know, the basic thing you need to do is get on Google Alert or any other alert system so you know what people are saying about you and you can respond to it. And the other question was that what they were pushing was letting their employees blog. but setting up guidelines for how they could blog. And they were talking about Google and how people were able to bypass the mass of Google and get to bloggers and make Google feel more personal because they could talk directly to bloggers. And they were talking about that for even for small businesses, how they could, by setting up a blog, you know, get international attention.
That's a really a couple of interesting points there too, Steve. Companies, before they do much else, need to have a social media policy. You need to determine who from your company can talk about the company and what the guidelines are for employees. There are any number of resources for social media policies that you can find on Google and that kind of thing. Naked Conversations is a book that I hadn't thought of in a number of years, but it's a great book. Another one that just came out is called The Now Revolution, and it was written by a couple of acquaintances of mine on Twitter, who Jay Baer and Amber Naslin, who wrote this book, and it's a really interesting look at a variety of different tools.
Is that the one called Social Media?
No, it's called The Now Revolution. It's a book.
I just read one that I thought was really shallow. I mean, it was just PR all the way through. It never really said anything.
I haven't read that one.
There's probably a lot of books like that.
Yeah.
I know there's one. But.
Because The Naked Conversation really talked about underlying principles of what was going on, mm-hmm. and that's why I liked it.
And that was old media. So let's talk about some more new media.
Blogging.
Blogging and books. Who reads books anymore besides
Well, they had it online, too, so you could get it online.
Okay.
You can get it on your Kindle.
Yeah. No, I mean, you could just get it online and read mm-hmm. it online.
We have another email here I'd like to read, which is from Dale. And Dale says, Skype and email, mm-hmm. like this one, with no word limit, are free. In what ways are newer media superior? And I would have to say, for a start, most of them do seem to be free.
And I would say I am I do have Skype and I use Skype a lot and uh-huh. I like Skype.
And people, if you don't know what Skype is like a Dick Tracy watch for your computer that you can talk with another person and see them while you're talking.
Internationally.
If you know, mm-hmm. probably more people know what Skype is and know what Dick Tracy is at this point. But.
And I think Skype and email are good tools. Again, depending on who you're trying to talk to and who you're uh-huh. trying to reach and what you're trying to do. But I would say that also with Skype, until recently, you could only talk to one other person at a time on Skype. Now you can do conference calling. Email, you can send to a number of different people. Facebook, you send to even more people. And Twitter, you send to even more people if you can. So it just depends on what you're trying to do, who you're trying to do it to, and those types of things. You have to have a goal in mind in order to figure out which of the tools you want to use.
Right. And I would think that this would be a good time to look at some other questions. For instance, in some ways, one of the great things about the internet for me has been the fact that I can meet people that I haven't ever actually met in the flesh and have interactions with them. For instance, I collaborated on a DVD with a person about a very complex and interesting topic, and I was able to do this entirely by email. So this is a shrinking world. Is that mm-hmm. a good thing or a bad thing, maybe? Or does it have both?
Well, let me tell you, when I came up here as a young professor, I felt, in 1977, I felt I was, you know, I was stuck with the consortium library, and that was my research materials. You know, and over time, I've been able to get access to any journal, any mm-hmm. book, online. You know, you don't need the library anymore. So it's just, location doesn't matter anymore.
I think that's really true. And almost, I mean, we've always thought of it as, Alaska, geographically isolated. But it really isn't isolated anymore because we can reach almost anywhere that we want to reach.
Assuming you have good internet mm-hmm. access.
Right, which is a whole different show and something I don't know too much about. I'd like to give out the numbers again for the people that would like to call. And those numbers would be, for Anchorage, 550-8433. Outside of Anchorage, it's a toll-free call, 1-888-353-5752.
Peter, let me just, you know, I did a class recently with Olay.
Right.
Just on blogging.
Right.
And you actually went when I was out of town.
I did.
And one of the questions that came up is, you know, what is a blog?
Right.
And you know, it comes from the words web and log.
Right.
Which got meshed into blog,
which is one ugly word, I got to say.
And, you know, I look at it as really, it's sort of my personal journal.
Right.
Which other people can eavesdrop on.
Exactly. And that is an interesting thing because that brings up the whole privacy issue again. Would you would you consider putting a personal journal? Most people wouldn't leave it out.
What I would say is I don't write what I used to write in my journal that I wrote to myself. So it's more a journal of ideas than it is of personal stuff. Though other people do write very personal stuff on their blogs.
Right, which gets us back to privacy again and the consequences of that. But I guess that that's the sort of thing that is changing so much it's hard to even talk about now because the definition of privacy of and what the consequences is going to be of these violations of what we used to think of as our privacy are going to change over time as people become more used to this kind of thing.
I think so. I see that with my kids.
Right.
What we think is private, they don't necessarily think of and as private. And we find ourselves sometimes at night saying, you know, no, really, let's not talk about that outside of the house, you know, and it's...
Right.
Oh, I've already blogged it. Well, I mean, that's one of the things with my kids. You know, they're sort of like, I don't want people to be able to blog my name or to Google my name and find out stuff from you that I'm doing. And so my son got married this summer, and I only have the vaguest allusions to that on my blog. Now, it turns out he's posted on his blog, but that's his decision.
Right.
And I can't make those decisions for him. And so I just, you know, I use initials to reference my wife and friends that I do things with instead of their names. And I'm pretty subtle about saying that that certain things happened.
I think that's a really important point to make, too. And I think that, again, is a personal choice. There are a lot of people I've noticed on Twitter, a lot of the people will use initials for other family members if they're talking about something that happened on Twitter. On Facebook, people seem to be, and I don't know if it's just the people that I'm with, but it seems to be much more of a personal tool. And they're freer to link people.
And we haven't even talked about LinkedIn.
We haven't. And
we haven't even talked about 995 of them.
Right. I've got a caller here on... This is Jeff from Wasilla. And Jeff, what would you like to tell us about?
Hi. Well, I think that just a couple of topics I'd like to throw out and then just go offline and listen to you. The first one is the most recent thing about privacy. Privacy is actually, I can only have personal privacy to the extent that you and everybody else doesn't want to poke in and gather information and disseminate it. And so it has to do with respect. It's, you know, one of the reasons that high-ranking politicians are in the news because they banged the maid or whatever it is, you know, which has nothing to do with the job they're doing, is because there is a different attitude. The attitude is, my job is to get you, kind of number. And privacy is now, it's like a hypothetical concept unless you really totally isolate yourself. And there's no halfways with any of the social sites. If you put your name on some website, even if it's not one of the social sites, sooner or later it's going to show up. And sooner or later you're going to get one of those anonymous emails that say, you know, six people are looking for you, log on to this, or click the link. And the third part that I want wanted to throw out as a concept is there a continuum, conceptually, let's say, between present, the youngest of us is who's doing it, most social networking continuously, texting or on the internet via computer or whatever device, and the other end of the spectrum, the concept of the Borg. Do the Borg know about their being interconnected, you know?
Conscious
of your eyeballs, and are they aware there's another way to live? The kids now know there's another way to live because us old guys are still hanging out using keyboards.
Right.
Or hanging out not using any of that stuff and actually living.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right. I mean, it's cerebral masturbation is also a habit, you know, can become a habit. Anyway, so that's the concept. You know, there is a certain self-will, and I think if all you've ever known is total connectedness to anyone you'd care to connect with, and so on and so on, and then, you know, if the power goes down, there's this feeling. It's like, you know, that individual may not have to be in solitary confinement for very long to feel the effects. They might be sitting in their own living room, and the power goes down.
Jason, right. let me.
Thanks for your call, Jason.
Yeah, let me reveal a personal story. I met my wife.
I'm writing this down.
Yeah, I met my wife.
It's also
over a weekend before I left for the Peace Corps, and then I went to Thailand for 2 years. Only, you know, at that time she was just some woman I met, and we wrote letters.
That's very sweet and old-fashioned of you to do that. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we got to know each other by writing letters to each other. It took maybe 2 weeks. If I sent a letter, it had to get to her, and I might not get anything back for 2 or 3 weeks. And so I just, you know, and in the end, when I came back, we got married not too long after that, and we had our 40th anniversary this year. So, you know, I'm just putting that into perspective in terms of, you know, you can go on the internet, get in a chat room and meet somebody, or go on Craigslist, or, you know, find somebody and go meet, and you know, it's probably over, you know, before I could have finished the letter and put it in the mailbox.
And I think that it's unfortunate in many ways that we have changed to that point also. I mean, my husband was living here, and I was in San Francisco actually when we met. So it was a similar, we wrote letters, we were on the phone, but it also allows time for things to germinate and those relationships to really grow. You aren't making the snap judgments that happen today.
And you can hold the letter there. I mean, sticking it in the mailbox is sort of like pushing the button.
Exactly.
But it takes a lot longer before you get to that point. And on the other hand, we met totally by accident, and if we hadn't met at that one point, we might never have met. And I think the internet gives people a lot more chances to meet people who have similar interests and just to find in the world or even in your own community people that you know, have good close interests with.
Well, that brings
one thing? One of the things I think is really interesting, too, is that we're starting to see at least some discussion about, I need to disconnect for the weekend. I'm just going to totally unplug. There's a lot of that discussion that I see going on. And then also, Kyle Hopkins, who works at the Daily News, mm-hmm. has started this club in town that he calls Letter Nerds.
Right.
And the Letter Nerds meet, I believe, once a week. And anybody can go to their meeting, and you write a letter, and you put a real stamp on it, and you put it in the box, and you mail it. And I think it's cool. I'm glad that there's some return to some of that formality.
And as long as the post office doesn't go out of business before. Yeah.
And I'd say Kyle is one of the more connected and media-savvy types that are working in that legacy media that we talked about.
Exactly.
But he's got the longing, obviously, for that sort of a more thoughtful and kind of well thought out sort of mm-hmm. sincere effort as opposed to just dashing something off. And that connection idea with other people brings up another issue for me, which is how do we keep from falling into patterns that just reinforce our thoughts? And with the web, you can just pick your sources and you don't ever have to see or interact with anybody you don't believe with. And how do we get our thoughts fresh if we're not going to be challenged? And isn't there a bigger opportunity here for us to avoid one another as well as to connect with one another?
You know, that's one of the things I try and do in my blog, which is to try and look at things from a different perspective or put them in a larger context and twist things around and looking at what other people are saying. Or, I mean, I'm constantly thinking, how are people going to respond to this? And I better check what I'm writing so that I have an answer to it mm-hmm. As I'm writing.
Yeah, and I think that that is what makes your blog a great blog for people to come to, too, because you're really doing the research and you're making sure that you're understanding what you're writing about. But I think that what we do have with this changing media landscape, even with traditional TV news, newspapers and that kind of thing, is people don't have to listen to what they don't want to know about. And that's what's causing, I think, a lot of fragmentation, is I can decide, I haven't and I won't, that all I want to listen to is Fox News. All I want to watch is Fox and anything that Fox does. And that's what I believe is right about the world, because I'm not seeing anything else. And I think it's a really dangerous path for us to go down. And that's where some of the broader streams on Twitter, I think, are really interesting, is to see what other people are thinking. To see, you know, the revolution in Egypt. That was an incredible thing to watch happening on social media as the word of what was happening in that square started to come out. But it came out in so many different ways, depending on what the purview was that you came into it from.
And part of that is just being there when it's happening. I mean, you would have found out about that later, but there's an excitement to being a person that's getting that tweet, or to imagine how those people felt that were getting tweets from that person that was two doors down from Osama when the helicopters were coming. And he said, oh, these darn helicopters are bothering me. To have that as part of your experience is something we've never had before. That's the sort of thing that...
Well, I mean, we've had the experience that person had before, because there are always people that
but
were close
that,
by.
Yeah.
You know, and we've had situations where people were on the phone describing, but not in the same way.
And not as quickly.
Right.
But I would also say, you know, every new medium has changed the landscape, and every tool that we have has benefits and then it has drawbacks.
Right.
I mean, cars have accidents and cause pollution, and you know, all of this with this medium, though, is so complicated figuring out what the side effects are, you know, like the privacy issues and things like that, is much more difficult.
The other thing that can happen much more quickly, too, is, okay, the guy who was saying the helicopters are bothering me tonight, there's also that spread so quickly.
Right.
There's the other side of it where he says these helicopters are really bothering me. They've just done XYZ when they didn't do anything even close to that.
Right.
There's a real responsibility that I wish that people would take on themselves. Not only the guy who puts the falsehood out, but the guy who doesn't correct it.
Well, there's obviously lots of topics we've left here on the table, but we'll have to come back and pick them up later when we're going to have a just show down the road. It'd be fun to have both of you back. I want to thank both my guests, Mary Deming Barber and Steve Alfrecht, who've been good sports and shared a lot of information with us. This has been a great hour. Thanks to both of them. And coming on Hometown next week, we're going to have Charles Woolforth talking about the planned new UAA Sports Center. Pat Yak is the Vice President of Public Media. Kristen Spack engineered today's program. You can join us on Facebook and Twitter at Alaska Public, also alaskapublic.org, I guess. The Facebook and Twitter is just Alaska Public. And check out our new website, alaskapublic.org. Thanks for listening. I'm Peter Dunlap-Scholl.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.